Morning. Today's daf in Zvachim Sadi Ches. We are on Sadi Zayim and Amud Beis. We are, God willing, today going to finish the 11th parak of the Masechta, begin the 12th parak of the Masechta. We are just finishing up one question from yesterday. It's not even a small question. It's a pretty large question, and that is that if I have one carbon get mixed in with another carbon, so it is going to take on the status of the carbon that gets absorbed. So, for example, chatas gets mixed together with a shlamim, and I say mixed together, I mean it actually it has an absorption, it has a blia, where the carbon chatas now is balua, it's absorbed into another carbon. So the other carbon now is going to have the status as of the carbon chatas. A carbon chatas can only be eaten for one day and one night. Can only be eaten by zechrei kuna and can only be eaten in the azar. We've gone over these halachas numerous times. And so once I have a carbon chatas get absorbed into another carbon, so that second carbon now will have all that, meaning even though it may be a carbon shlamim, and I have 2 days to eat it, and I can eat it throughout all of Yerushalayim, and anyone can eat it, but once it's absorbed with the carbon chatas, so now it's confined, it's restricted to whatever the carbon chatas is restricted to. And the Gemara's question that we asked yesterday was, why don't we simply say that the mitzvah's essay should be doch the los essay? So why don't we have a positive commandment of eating carbon override the negative prohibition, whatever negative prohibition there may be? And the Gemara is Gemara's answer. Gemara gives two answers. One answer we went over yesterday. I'll say it over again. Rava Amar, we are on Sadi Zainam at Beis. So Rava gives a very fundamental answer. In the Beis HaMikdash, essay does not doch halosa essay. The positive commandment does not override the negative prohibition. Generally speaking, throughout Kol HaTorah Kula, we have the rule that essay doch halosa essay. The positive commandment overrides the negative prohibition. The Ramban in Chumash, which we've quoted already a number of times, the Ramban in Chumash says that the reason why essay doch halosa essay is because essay represents the ava, that's love, in other words, those are the actions that we do, and losa essay, that's the yira, that's the negative prohibition. And so in terms of the meters of ava and yira, so if given the choice, obviously we want both. We want to both love Hashem and we want to fear Hashem. But given if there's a tension between the two, if there's a battle between the two, so we would choose ava over yira. The Torah tells us to choose ava over yira. In other words, love over fear. However, in the Beis HaMikdash, that's not how it works. In the Beis HaMikdash, so yira, fear, awe, so that is that's the dominating motif, if you will, of the Beis HaMikdash. And so therefore, in the Beis HaMikdash, so we don't say esse docha los asse, but just the opposite. We say the los asse is docha the asse. And how do I know that this is true? The Gemara gives us an example. We know when it comes to the Karban Pesach, one of the unusual halachas by Karban Pesach, I say unusual, doesn't apply to the karbanos. One of the unusual halachas regarding Karban Pesach is that by Karban Pesach, we eat the entirety of the Karban Pesach, but we cannot break a bone. Now, of course, we'd love to break a bone. There's marrow in the bone. Marrow is delicious. I only discovered that later in life, but but it's delicious. And the Torah says that's some losish b'rubo, but you're not allowed to break the bone of the Karban Pesach. Now, Rabbi Shimon Manasseh Omer Echad Etzem Sheish B'Moach VeEchad Etzem Sheim B'Moach, and Rabbi Shimon Manasseh teaches us that it comes to bones, it doesn't matter whether it does or does not have marrow. Now, if it doesn't have marrow, I understand. The Torah says not to break it, and there's no gain. But what about a bone that has marrow? So, a Karban Pesach bone that has marrow in it. So let's break the bone, even though it's an issur in the Torah, and let's eat the marrow that's inside. So the essay, the mitzvah's essay, the positive commandment of eating Karban Pesach should override the los essay. Now, I mentioned this yesterday. I'll briefly mention it again today. It's a little bit difficult to understand the Gemara's point over here because we only say essay docha los essay when they are concurrent with one another. When in order to do one, I'm doing the other, and it's happening simultaneously. Over here, first I break the bone, and then I take the marrow out and eat it. Okay, Rishonim deal with it, with that question. But anyway, the point of our Gemara is, Amayin, Esi Aseh V'Leit Chelos Aseh. So why don't we simply say that the positive commandment should override the negative prohibition? Answer, Ela'ino Aseh Doch Chelos Aseh Shebe Mikdash. And the answer is, that's not how it works in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have Aseh to being Doch Chelos Aseh, but the Los Aseh is going to override the Aseh in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so that's answer number one. That's what we went over yesterday. Rav Ashi Amar Yikdash. Asehu. Rav Ashi gives another answer. Seemingly, Rav Ashi is arguing with Rava's point that the rule of flipping essay being docha los essay in the Beis HaMikdash is that los essay is going to override essay. It sounds like from the Gemara that Rav Ashi is arguing with that premise, but I say that only by way of speculation. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's correct. But anyway, Rav Ashi says yikdash, that when I have the chatas the taste of the chatas get imbued into another carbon, so the other carbon becomes sanctified. It no longer is just simply a lav not to eat the other carbon, but Yigdash tells me that it's actually a positive commandment in that when the taste and flavor of and the fat of a carbon chatas goes into another animal, into another carbon, it actually imbues it with kedusha on a positive mitzvah level. So the Gemara describes this as being an essay. That's also a positive commandment. Now, it's not just a question of restriction. Hey, I can't eat this carbon because it is imbued with carbon chatas in it. But in other words, but we also view it as a positive commandment, meaning that the carbon chatas now permeating through another carbon is in fact viewed as a positive commandment. And now, it's not just simply essay versus los assay. It's essay versus los assay and an assay. And here we go. From here till basically the end of the perek, the Gemara now, it's almost like a summary statement. And at the end of Parshat Tzav, after the Torah goes through all the halachas of the karban, so the Torah gives us a summary statement. Right? So the Gemara is giving a summary statement, and the Torah gives a summary statement. The end of Parshat Tzav, that was pretty quick. Towards the end, not the very end. End of Perek Zion. Zos HaTorah. These are the laws. I know the Pasuk sounds familiar. Incorporated into the Piyut. I'm talking to the Ashkenazim here. Sorry. Before Mosav Anyantiv, we have a little poem that we say before Mosav. Whatever. It's Kakeli. I don't know why it's so popular, but it's whatever. Always a fight in terms of when we say it, when we don't say it. Anyway, standard Ashkenaz piyutim. So the pasuk says that these are the halachas regarding all these. So it's a summary statement in the Torah. What the Gemara now is going to discuss is that we're going to have a summary statement also regarding a lot of the halachas that we've been learning. Ashkechan. So the Gemara starts off like this. Chatas demiskadish bebalua. When I have the carbon chatas that permeates through another carbon, so it will now have the, it will impact the other carbon and it will give it all the restrictions of a carbon chatas. We know that because it says so in Parsha Tzav. We know that because it says it in the Parsha of carbon chatas. Gemara's question is very simple. How do I know that that applies to all other carbonas as well? Shar Kedashim Minalan, how do I know it applies to other carbonas? Amashmol Mishum Rabbi Lazar. So now we're going to quote our pasuk. Our pasuk, again, is in Perek Zayin of Vayikra. Towards the end of Parshat Tzav. So it is the 37th pasuk of Perek Zayin. Zos haTorah la'ol la'mincha l'chatzos la'ashem la'milun v'zevach ha'shlamim. So there are six categories of karbanos that are mentioned over here in this pasuk. And what we're going to do with all six of these categories of karbanos is we're going to learn a special and unique halacha that applies to one of them. And because they are put together in the same pasuk, so we have what is classically known as a hekesh. Being that now all six of these are contained in one pasuk, that means that whatever halacha applies to one of them is going to apply to all of them. So here we are going to do basically an expansion of six different halachas. It's actually going to be a little bit more than six. You'll see why. Ola. So ki ola. So now what are we going to learn out now from the carbon ola? Ma ola to unakli, af kol to unakli. That the carbon ola requires a kli. And so just like the carbon ola requires a kli, so too every other carbon requires a kli as well. My kli. Okay, great. We need a kli for a carbon ola. A kli for which part of the avoda? Elam and Mizrak. So are we talking about a bowl? Rashi explains bowl for Kabbalah Sadam. So the Gemara says that the ola is not the only carbon where we mention a bowl for the collection of blood. So b'shamit zibor namik ziv behu. It says it by shamit zibor. The pasuk says by Mamad Har Sinai ve'ikach Moshe chatzi adam ve'yasem baganos. Moshe took blood and placed in the bowl. So you see that kabbalas adam, that the receiving of the blood after you shecht an animal for a carbon, is already mentioned in the Torah, not just limited to carbonola but other carbonas as well. So the Gemara says we're not talking about a bowl for the collection of blood. Ela desakin. So what we must be talking about over here is a knife, meaning that for a carbonola you need a knife. Now, you need a knife, by the way, simply because how else are you going to shech the animal? Now, it happens to be that for shechita, we've learned this before, we're going to learn it again. For shechita, it doesn't necessarily have to be a metal blade. Meaning for the halach of shechita, it can be anything sharp, right? A glass, a reed. any item that, as long as it's sharpened, non-serrated, so you could use it for shechita. So, okay, so admittedly, the Gemara over here limiting to just simply a knife, meaning seemingly a metal blade, the Gemara does so. Anyway, elabisakin, va'ola gufa minala. Now, where's the source in the Torah that for a carbon ola, I need a knife to shech the carbon ola? Dechsiv. Avram takes a knife in his hand, the ma'achelas. Ma'achelas, interesting usage in the Torah to describe a knife. The word ma'achelas means that which consumes something else. So, but the knife. V'hasam olahu dechsiv. Now we know that Yitzchak is coming as an ola. The pasuk says vayaaleu leola tachas beno, because in substitution for a carbon for his son Yitzchak, so Avram Avinu brings a isle, and vayaaleu leola. Torah says very clearly it is brought as a carbon ola tachas beno in the place of his son. Okay, so halacha number one is ola. Ola requires a knife. We learned it from Akedas Yitzchak, and that brings us now to the first point. Remember, all this entire drasha that we're going to do right now is all to get to the point that by the carbon chatzis, it says it has carbon chatzis also in the list of six. And by carbon chatzis, the halach is that when the chatzis is balua, when it's absorbed into another carbon, so that other carbon takes on all the restrictions of the carbon chatzis. And the whole point the Gemara is going to make is that that's applicable to all the carbonos simply because it's in this pasuk. So,
in terms of cleave, that applies to everything. It doesn't apply to the bird.
We're not right. Birds are not in the discussion right now. I understand they're categorically. You're right. It's part, but it's not in the discussion. Mincha. The Gemara goes now halacha number two. Ma mincha inu nechalas ela zichrei kohuna. Of kol inu necham ela zichrei kohuna. So a mincha can only be eaten by male kohanim. So too, other kachei kadashim can only be eaten by zichrei kohuna. So mahi ichatas v'ashem hajik sipu. Now the Gemara says, what other kachei kachim are we looking to include over here? Because if it's chatzos and asham, we already have an explicit pasuk in the Torah that tells us that the male kohanim eat chatzos and asham. The pasuk says, "Kol zachar bekohanim yochlenu." So it's a really clear pasuk in the Torah. I don't need a drasha / hekesh to teach me this point. I already know it based on the pasuk. V'isham mitzibor miribu dekrasi. So, and if you want to tell me that shal mitzibor, I know it's confusing, but it's a shlamim, but it's a communal shlamim, so it has the status of kashi kadashim, and therefore can only be eaten by zichrei kohuna, by male kohanim. But the Gemara says, but that too I'm not learning out through a hekesh, I learned that via another source. The pasuk says, bekadosh kadashim tochlenu, kol zachal yechol oso, the li made al sham mitzibur shein anecham la zichrei kohuna. So we have a drasha, a special drasha, that tells us that the male kohanim eat sham mitzibur. So basically what the Gemara is now wondering is, how is the Hekesh here serving as a source for this halacha when seemingly I have another source in the Torah that gets me to that point? The Gemara answers Tanaihi. The Gemara says that it's a machlokas Tanaim exactly what the source of male kohanim eating shal mitzibor. Does it come from the pasuk that we just quoted in Parshas Korach? Or is it coming from our Hekesh here in Parshas Tzav? Ika, the top of Tzadi Chesam and Aleph. Ika danafke le'mahacha v'ika danafke le'mahacha. Some learn it from here, some learn it from there. Okay, good. That takes us now through karbanos, categories 1 and 2. Right, there are 6 in total in the pasuk. Right, ola mincha, chatas asham, miluim, and zevach hashlamim. So let's continue. Chatas. We are now up to number 3. We are up to the karban chatas, and this is why we're quoting all this, just for this point. Ma chatas miskadeshes babalua, afko miskadeshes babalua. When the karban chatas, right, with the example we gave yesterday in yesterday's daf, is let's say you take the fat of a carbon chatas and you grease up another carbon with that fat and you roast it, allowing the fat now to melt and permeate throughout the other carbon. So now that other carbon is going to have all the restrictions of a carbon chatas. So we know that that's true by carbon chatas. We know that because the Torah says it earlier at the end of Perek Vav. So the Gemara says, so how do I know it applies to other carbonos? Our hekesh right over here. So chatas machatas miskadeshes bebalua, of kol miskadeshes bebalua. Good. Asham. What are we learning now from number 4? Category number 4 is an asham. Asham very much like chatas. There's one very basic difference between a chatas and an asham, aside from the fact that a chatas is brought for isuri kares. Asham is brought for specific averus in the Torah. The Torah actually identifies each averus specifically and when you bring a carbon asham. But they're both being mechaper, they're both providing an atonement for the person who's bringing it. There is a really basic fundamental difference between a chatas and an asham. A chatas, for the most part, is coming from a female animal. Asham, always is coming from a male animal. That's an important point to remember as we continue in the Gemara. So when it comes to an asham, so you know that both the fetus and the placenta are not imbued with kedusha. So too, that's going to be true by all other karbanos. The fetus and the placenta are not going to be imbued with kedusha. Now, by a karban asham, do you know why the fetus and placenta are not going to be imbued with kedusha? Because it's a male animal. And the little biology that I'm prepared to teach right now is that it cannot have a baby. Okay? Right, right. So a karban asham is not going, its fetus and its placenta are not going to be imbued with kedusha simply because it does not exist, it cannot happen. So too, that's true with other karbanos as well. Other karbanos that can have both a fetus and a placenta, otherwise known as a female animal, so their fetus and placenta are not going to be imbued with kedusha. Now, this should ring familiar to all of us, as we have seen this idea expressed many times before, in terms of how to view a fetus. Is a fetus considered a separate entity of its mother? Now here we could be talking about animals, we could talk about humans, that happens to be our discussion right now. It's just strictly limited to animals. But in other words, do we say that ubar is lav yerech imahu? Do we say that a fetus is not considered part and parcel of the mother, but even as a fetus, even obviously physically attached to the mother, but halachically do we view it as a separate entity? Or do we say ubar yerech imo? Do we say that a fetus is considered while attached, just simply like any other appendage of the mother, uba yerachimo. Give me a second. So generally speaking, we have this debate that occurs and recurs throughout the entirety of Shas. Over here, however, this may or may not be connected. No pun intended, or maybe pun intended. But this may or may not be connected. In other words, over here, what we're asking is, or what we're trying to identify is that while the fetus is in a host mother who happens to be a karban, so does that karban status now automatically go to the fetus? Now, let's also be clear about one other point as we talk about this topic and soon to leave this topic. But let's make this point very clear. Once the karban mother gives birth to its baby, so when the baby emerges, the baby will be imbued with kedusha, right? The vlad of a karban is going to have the status of a karban. So let's try to wrap our heads around this idea. So if the baby emerging is going to have kedusha, so why doesn't it have kedusha inside? So that's a why question. You know, I stay away from the why questions. Why doesn't it have kedusha inside? So let me restate the question. Not why doesn't it have kedusha inside, it doesn't have kedusha inside. Meaning what the Gemara now is teaching us is that the fetus and the placenta, while in utero, does not have kedusha. Only after it emerges, then and only then is it going to have kedusha. And we learn that from karban asham. Now that sounds like a bit of a tricky move. Because how can we learn something from karban asham when karban asham doesn't have a fetus and placenta? So to which the Gemara now is going to make two points of assumption in terms of how we got here. Kasavar. The Gemara says, Vladis kadoshim bev yasam min kadoshin. So point number one, which I know I already articulated, but still, now we're seeing it inside of the Gemara. Point number one is that fetus and placenta only have kedusha only upon emergence from the mother, but not prior to that point. And point number two, danim esher mishi efshar. In order to successfully make this point, you have to subscribe to the idea that we can learn something which is possible from a source which is impossible. Now, if you remember, you'll see on the side of the Gemara how many times this idea is expressed in the Gemara. Sukkah, Yevamos, Horios, Menachos, wow. Temura, Nida. This idea is expressed time and again, and the Gemara generally has a controversy regarding this, whether or not you can learn something which is possible from a source where it's impossible. The Gemara is just simply pointing out, in order to successfully make this hekesh, you must subscribe to the viewpoint that Danan Efshar, Mishai Efshar, I can learn something which is possible from a source which is something which is impossible. Okay. Miluim. We're now up to the next point. Now, the milum are the karbanos that are brought on the days of inauguration. When they inaugurated the Mishkan, so the karbanos that were brought were special karbanos. They were known as miluim. So, ma miluim, mosrein b'sreifa v'ein balechayim b'mosreihem. Av kol, mosrein b'sreifa v'ein balechayim b'mosreihem. So when it comes to the miluim, so we say the following. First of all, by the miluim, if there's anything left over by the miluim, meaning after shechted, after the carbon is consumed, if there's any leftovers, what we classically refer to as nosar, so what happens to nosar? It's burnt. That's the mitzvah in the Torah regarding nosar, that you burn nosar. So this is true by miluim. The Torah explicitly expresses it by miluim. It's also going to be true by other carbonists as well. And while live nosar, I'll explain that better in just a second, live nosar is not subject to sreifa. So these halachas are true by miluim, so too by all other carbonists as well, the same thing is true. That mosrein besreifa, that any nosar is going to be burnt, the mitzvah to burn it, and ein balechem b'mosrein, but live nosar is not subject to being burnt. Live, just give me a second, I'm sorry. Live nosar, what am I talking about when I say live nosar? Right? So, Rashi explains like this. Rashi says that when we talk about classic nosar, we all know. We've gone over this many times. Classic nosar is after you shech the carbon and after you give the parts to the mizbeach, the meat of a chatos, the meat of an asham, the meat of a shlamim are going to be consumed. Again, different consumers. All right? Different halachas. But, and every carbon has a time frame in which it can be eaten. One day, one night, 2 days. Okay, and after that time is expired, so any leftover meat is nosar. We've seen that already time again. What's live nosar? Sounds like a live bait. Okay, so now live nosar goes like this. So Rashi over here articulates the classic examples of live nosar. Let's say a person is obligated to bring a carbon chatos. Okay, one carbon chatos, one animal. Person happens to be somewhat more on the nervous side. Okay, he suffers a little bit from extra nerves. He's OCD. And so therefore for him, he's not going to set aside one carbon. He's going to set aside two carbonos. The second carbon is his official insurance policy. If anything were to happen to the first animal, so he's got the second animal ready and waiting to be offered as a carbon. Fine. He goes to the Beis HaMikdash with his two animals. So he gives the first one to the Kohen, says, here's my carbon. Good. Wonderful. Everything went according to plan. What is now the second animal? The second animal is what's called nosar. Now, it's not nosar in the classic sense of, right? In other words, it's not leftover that we consumed. In other words, it didn't go beyond the point of expiration of time. It's nosar just simply in that it's surplus. It's a surplus carbon. What happens to the surplus carbon? So you dispose of it, but not you don't burn it. Now, when the Gemara says you don't burn it, even at this point in time, I can't imagine the Gemara is even entertaining the idea that we'll just simply burn it live, meaning I don't think that's what the Gemara means. It just simply means that upon disposal, it doesn't need to go through any kind of burning disposal, meaning just a regular disposal is all you need. Okay, that's halacha by milum. Oh, and oh, by the way, but how do I know that this is true regarding miluim? How do I know that live animal, bale chayim mosrehem by miluim? So Rashi over here writes very simply, because the miluim were carbon seber, they were public carbonos. Public carbonos, what we don't do with public money is that we don't buy insurance carbonos. Meaning individuals want to buy insurance carbonos, that's fine. But in other words, but with public money, you buy the one carbon that you need, and there's not going to be any of this Baalei Chaim Mosrein when it comes to the Miluim. And since that's true regarding Miluim, that's also going to be true even by private carbonos as well. Shlamim.
Is that considered
not there? No. Shlamim. Ma Shlamim mipaglim umit paglim, afkol mifaglim umit paglim. Okay, what special halacha do we have regarding Shlamim? So it's a halacha that we've gone over so many times in this Masechta, and that's the halacha of Pigel. The halacha of Pigel that applies by Shlamim. And when I say it applies by Shlamim, meaning that when the Torah introduces us to Pigel, the Torah introduces it to us via the carbon Shlamim. So how do I know that the idea of Pigel, the disqualification of Pigel, applies to all other carbonos? Answer, our Hekesh. And that is category number 6. So what we have now just done in the last Amud of Gemara is gone through the 6 categories mentioned towards the end of Parshat Tzav, at the end of Perek Zion. So, and from all 6, there is a halacha specific to each one of the karbanos, but being now that they're placed in the same pasuk together, so whatever specific halacha we're learning regarding one karban is now going to be universally applied to other karbanos as well. And so that is round 1. And here we go now, round number two. In round number two, we're going to basically do the same thing again, but a different brisa and a somewhat different version of what we just learned together. Bim masnisa tana, in the brisa we are learning, mishmei de Rabbi Akiva, in the name of Rabbi Akiva. And so here we go now, a brisa, same idea, just slightly different details. Mincha. And here we go now, once again. Now here, we start with mincha. In this brisa, what happened to the carbonola? I'll admit, I don't know. Okay. Mincha. Ma mincha miskadeshes bebaluah, of kol miskadeshes bebaluah. So in the brisa, we have the idea that a mincha, where if the mincha gets absorbed into another carbon, so whatever restrictions you have regarding a mincha, and remember, mincha is kodesh kadashim. So that means that it's only going to be eaten by the zirchei kahuna in the azara. So if the mincha now gets cooked with another carbon, and now that other carbon gets the actual pieces of mincha as part of it, so it too will have all those restrictions as well. Now, so in this brisa, we're learning this source now, not from chatas, but we're learning it from mincha. V'itzrich l'michtav mincha, v'itzrich l'michtav chatas, the Gemara is...
You don't have a pasuk
by... I hear your point. I do hear your point. Rashi over here doesn't cite a pasuk.
There is no pasuk.
If we're learning it, I hear you. I totally hear you. If the Gemara is learning it from Mincha, the Gemara must be making an assumption that somewhere it's sourced by a carbon Mincha. Okay? I'll look more. But your point is very good. The Gemara says, look, by a mincha is really soft. Which, by the way, if you think about it, I'm going to make this point a number of times when we get to Masechta Menachos. Do you know that all menachos are matzah? Meaning they're unleavened, with two exceptions. One is the Shtei Alechem offered on Shavuos, and the other one is a Karban Todah. 10 of the loaves are chametz. All menachos are unleavened, not allowed to rise. And the Gemara consistently describes the mincha as being soft. Okay, so the idea of soft matzah, it's not a new idea. In fact, it's a really old idea. Right. So the Gemara describes mincha as being soft. And therefore, being that it's soft, so I can easily envision that it's going to be bolea, it's going to be absorbed into other foods. Avachatas, emelo, but a carbon chatas, it's a hard piece of meat. I know, it's not super hard, meaning, but in other words, but relative to mincha, it's much harder. So the iash, meaning chatas, mishum de karir. On the other hand, when it comes to carbon chatas, it's karir. So karir, Rashi tries to help me understand the word karir, but I don't speak Rashi's language. I speak a version of Rashi's language, but not that one. So Rashi describes that the meat is very thick, and the fat permeates throughout the meat. So basically, there are avenues in which flavor and taste can go through a chatas. Mishum dekari ava mincha imalo, but maybe that same thing is not true regarding mincha. Tzricha, the Gemara says, okay, so both points need to be stated, both by the mincha and the bechatas, in that if it gets absorbed into another carbon, it will take on it will provide all of its restrictions to the other carbon. Next, chatas. So again, this is all round two now. So in round two, we are learning out the same basic idea that there's a hekesh, and we're learning out various halachas from the hekesh, and now it's just a question of which are the halachas that we're learning from each of the karbanos that we're extending to all the other karbanos, chatas. Ma chatas en abala min achulin. Chatas only comes from non-consecrated animals, meaning I can't take an animal that's already consecrated. For example, meiser behema. Okay, penetration. Okay, fine. Thank you. So the, thank you, Rabbi Kornfeld. So the penetration. So eino ba'a ela min hachulin. So when it comes to chatas, it only comes from non-consecrated animals. I can't take, for example, my meiser behema animal, which anyway is going to be brought up as a carbon, and say, you know what? I'm going to sanctify it as a chatas. I can't take my sersheni money and simply say with my sersheni money, I'm going to use it to buy a carbon chatas, meaning it has to come from chulin, non-consecrated funds. So ain't a ba'alam and a chulin uviyom, it can only be offered during the day, uviyado yamanis, and when doing the avodah, you must use the right hand. Avkol ain't a ba'alam and a chulin uviyom uviyado yamanis. So that's true by the chatas, and it's going to be true by other karbanos as well. Meaning we're going to take these halachas and apply them to other karbanas. V'chatas minalan amar chista amar krav v'ahikriva aron es par chatas shelo. We know that a karban chatas has to come from private money, private non-consecrated money. Aaron on Yom Kippur is offering his par, and when we say his par, we literally mean it's his. It's coming out of his pocket. So asher lo mishalo, v'lo mishal tzibor, v'lo mishal meiser. It can't come from public money. It can't come from meiser sheni money. It must come out of pocket from his own private money. Meiser, I'm sorry, v'lo mishal meiser. Bayom. So the Gemara says, now what other halacha did we learn regarding the karban chatas? It can be offered only during the day, so to all other karbanos, or offered during the day. To which the Gemara objects. Gemara says, what are you talking about? Mi bayom tzavaso nafka. So the Gemara says, we already have another source in the Torah that teaches us that karbanos can only be offered during the day. We're not teasing it out of the karban chatas and learning it to other karbanos through a hekesh. So the Gemara says, kedei nas, but the Gemara says, you're right. This point over here is not the source. It's kedei nas, but just came along for the ride. But in other words, this is not the source. Biyadu hayamanis, what about the right hand? Midirabba barbachana nafka. The Gemara says, we learned that from another source in the Torah. We're not learning it from karban chatas. So the Gemara teaches us, we learned this already earlier in the Masechta, that anywhere where the Torah uses the words etzba and kahuna, so that means that the Kohen must be doing it with the right hand. So that's the source in the Torah, that avoda has to be done with the right hand. So why are you learning it out through a hekesh? The Gemara says, kedei naspa. Once again, the Gemara says that the point over here is just learned, is just brought along for the ride. But in other words, this is not the real source. So basically what we just learned together is that in terms of the halacha specific to chatas, which we're extending to other karbanos via hekesh, is the halacha of it must come out of pocket, out of your own pocket, meaning and you cannot use already consecrated funds to buy your karban chatas. It's that halacha. The halacha of yom, the halacha of yamin, of your right hand, those halachas really are based on other sources. Ibai, same of the Gustav like Rabbi Shimon, or the Gemara says, or maybe no. Maybe also like Rabbi Shimon, the Amr etzba lo bai kahuna, kahuna bai etzba. That on one hand, etzba does not require the word kahuna, but kahuna does in fact require the word etzba. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, that is not the source for the right hand, and so therefore maybe chatas does in fact become the source for the right hand. Okay. Meaning that according to Rabbi Shimon, again, a point that Gemara made earlier, according to Rabbi Shimon, when the Torah says the word etzba, so that immediately means right. But when the Torah says the word kahuna, that in of itself does not indicate that you must use the right hand. It has to say both the words kahuna and etzba.
By the way, I see there on the side that it does bring a pusuk back.
All right. It's just my lack of... It's my lack... Yeah, I was going to say. If the Gemara is learned using it as a limud, I assume that there's a pasuk. I just didn't know it. Okay. Asham. The Gemara now continues. We are now, again, in round two. We're doing the same exercise. We're going through each of the categories of karbanos mentioned in the end of Perek Zion. And what we're just simply doing is learning out a halacha to that karban and through the hekesh extending it to the other karbanos. What are we learning out from Asham? So previously we learned out from Asham is that the fetus and the placenta of a karban Asham is not sanctified, and that's true by other karbanos as well. Again, that operated with two assumptions. One, done in Efshar Mishi Efshar, and two, is that a fetus and placenta will only have Kedusha after it emerges from the mother. Okay. Here, in round two, we're learning out a different halacha from Karban Asham, specifically, Ma'asham Atzmosav Mutarim, Avkol Atzmosav Mutarim. What we learned from the Karban Asham is the bones. What can I do with the bones of a Karban Asham? So, remember, a Karban Asham is shechted. It is... Then the blood sprinkled on the Mizbeach, the Imurim of the Karban Asham are going to go up onto the Mizbeach, the meat of the Karban Asham are going to be consumed by the Kohanim. So I'm left with a pile of bones. And what am I doing now with the pile of bones? And the answer is very simple, whatever I want. Rashi over here writes, Ma'asham Atzmosav Mutarim, La'asos Mem Kalim. So you can make utensils out of them. Ani Shamati Shari Nechal Kohanim Venosar Ba'atzamos L'Shayich Ela B'davar Nechal. Isn't it nosar? Rashi says, no, it's not nosar. Nosar is only leftover of that which can be consumed. Obviously, the bones can't be consumed, so therefore the bones can't be eaten. The bones are not subject to nosar. And the nones, the marrow, yeah, marrow
so
is meat.
Can he eat the marrow of a bone?
No, marrow he will eat. In other words,
this is going to be...
It's an asham, so it's going to be eaten by the Kohen.
The marrow could become nosar. If you don't eat.
We're just talking about the basic bones of the animal.
This trying to expand this law from Hashem to everything else.
Yes.
So what about Ola?
Right, I
how do you expand it to Ola? Well, when Ola, it has to be burned, all of it.
Yeah. No, but only when the bone, we discussed this point earlier in the Masech, that's a good point. But that's only when the bone is attached to the meat. If for whatever reason the bone gets detached from the meat, the bone doesn't have to go up onto the Mizbech.
Even the olah.
Right? Okay. So so this is going to be true. This is going to be true regarding other carbonists as well, that the bones are, the bones after you go through the entire process of a carbon, the bones that are left over are mutter, meaning it does not have kedusha, there's no isra of me'ila, the bones are fine. Exactly where in the Torah, now we can ask the question, because I have Rashi here. Exactly where in the Torah does it say that the bones of a carbon asham, as opposed to any other carbon, is going to be fine? Where then we can take from there the halacha that since the asham is mentioned here in this pasuk and by the other carbonos, so we extend it to the others. So if you take a look at the last Rashi over there gives a suggestion in terms of where we learn this halacha from. Meaning the Gemara is not super clear about that point. Okay. Amar Rava, Pshita Li.
So this second set didn't have Ola.
Right. In round number two, the Gemara didn't bring down Ola.
Yeah, but round number two is not contradicting round number one, just adding.
It's a different Braisa.
Just adding to it.
Not adding, it's a different Braisa. Okay. Amar.
But go to right.
Maybe. Because in other words, it could be. I'll just give you an example. It could be that in round number two, in Braisa number two, maybe he doesn't subscribe to the assumption that done in Efshar Mishi Efshar, meaning I can't learn something impossible from something impossible. He can argue with that point. He can argue with the point that the fetus of a carbon does not have kedusha in utero. He could be arguing with that point. So there are points that are certainly up for contention.
Mm-hmm. It says, as the sin offering is, so is the guilt offering. There is one Torah for them. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it.
Okay, which pasuk? That's in?
Leviticus chapter 7, verse 7.
Okay, fine. Okay, Parshat Tzav also. Okay, Amar Rava, Pshitali. So Rava says, the following now is obvious to me. And so we are now closing on the 11th parak of Zvachim. And so here now, we're going to end where we started. We started with the halachas of kibbutz, laundering. If the blood of a carbon chatos goes into the clothing, so there's a special halacha in the Torah that it must be laundered out in the azara. Spot treatment, you don't have to wash the entire clothing, as we discussed since the beginning of this perek. And now the Gemara's question over here, a simple question. Dam chatos amata v'dam ola lamala. So you're walking through the azara and blood is splattering everywhere. Okay, it's exciting. So blood is splattering everywhere, and the blood of a carbon chatos now hits your clothing, and the blood of Ola hits on top of the blood of the carbon chatos. So now you have two layers of blood, one right on top of the other, on your clothing. The bottom layer is chatos, meaning the layer that's touching the clothing is chatos, the dam chatos, and the blood on top of that is dam Ola. Does that require laundering? The Gemara says that's obvious. The answer, of course, is yes. Dam chatos amata v'dam ola lamala ta'on kibbutz. That for sure requires kibbutz. By Rava. This is a setup for the next question. Dam ola lamata v'dam chatos lamala. But let's now invert. Let's have now the first blood hitting your clothing is the dam ola. And on top of that now you have dam chatos on top of that. So is the dam chatos actually making contact with your clothing? Maybe yes, maybe no. Arguable. But for our purposes right now, let's even say yes. Is it absorbed into your clothing? The answer, of course, is no. Meaning on below it, you have the dam ola. The dam ola is that now which made any kind of penetration into your clothing. The dam chatos is sitting on top of the dam ola. Does that require kibbutz? The Gemara says that's our question.
You're talking about two bloods splattering the same spot.
Right on the same spot. The Gemara is just right now, what the Gemara is doing right now is it wants to give definition to when is there a requirement of kibbutz. Contact? Or it has to be absorbed. The Gemara is just setting itself up to conceptualize of when is there a kibbutz requirement.
Right away, all of a sudden bringing this subject.
Let me just finish. Dam ola lamata v'dam chatos amala ma'u. Ma'ishim nogeahu v'hanogea. Odilma mishim baluahu. So the Gemara wants to now know, is what triggers the kibbutz requirement? Is it contact, or does it have to have an absorption? V'halabala. So hadapasha dein tuna kibbutz. Now he asked the question, and there's responses, there's no kibbutz requirement. Meaning that for the kibbutz requirement, you need a... You need not only a contact, but you need a form, some form of penetration. It has to be balua. Now, Hedy, to your question of why the Gemara is bringing this over here, meaning we have left kibbutz some pages ago in this parak. So sometimes, I don't have a great answer, but some...
I think it's interesting because we learned about putting the fat of a chatat on another, and it takes on the qualities of a chatat.
Right.
So the blood here, you should think, you take the qualities of the chatat.
Right. And sometimes... Sometimes the Gemara just kind of has kind of like a couple of loose ends. And so, meaning, just, you know, before we finish the perek, just a couple of loose ends to tie up. Amar Rav Pshita Li. Now Rav does has the following discussion. We know that if anything is Tameh, either a person or a garment, and you want to remove the Tameh, so you put in a mikvah. We also know that in order for the Tvila b'mikvah to be successful Tvila, there can be no Chatzitza. There could be no barrier separating the water, making contact with the either person or utensil. And I say kli over here. I could be talking about a utensil. We could be talking about a garment. Doesn't matter. So there can be no chatzitza. And so when a person tovels in the mikvah, so the person has to make sure that there is no dirt on the body that would serve as a chatzitza. Same thing is true regarding clothing. In order for something to be a chatzitza, it has to be something which a person is makpid. It's got to really bother him that is there. If a person is not makpid min haTorah, I'll be really clear about this. So if a person is not makpid min haTorah, it doesn't form as a chatzitza. Rabbinically, the rabbis instructed us to remove anything from our body or our clothing before we tovel in the mikvah. But if we're not makbid, if it is a piece of dirt, but it's something that just simply doesn't bother us, so then min haTorah, it does not form a chatzitza. So, butchers getting blood on their garments.
No problem.
That's not a big deal. That's, you know, all the time. I was thinking this morning. I was thinking this morning. Surgeons as well, right? Maybe not. So the. But for butchers to have blood on their clothing, it's not a big deal. If let's say you are a mechanic and you have some grease on your clothing, that's not a big deal.
Painter,
it's not a big deal. I use grease as an example, by the way, only because that's coming up in the Gemara. So fine, so these aren't big deals. So in other words, so these are clear examples of where you have something on your clothing, but because of your occupation, because of your profession, these things don't bother you. So ask the Gemara now as follows. I'm a Rav Pshita Li, but before we ask the question, let's get some facts on the ground. Dam al bigdo chotzeitz. If you have blood on your clothing and you have to tovel the clothing, so for you and I, it would bother us. The im tabachu, but if you're a butcher in a chotzeitz, it doesn't bother you because you're a butcher. It's fine. Revav al bigdo, if you have grease on your clothing, so for you and I, chotzeitz, because we're makpid, so therefore it's a chatzitza. V'im mocher revav, but let's say you're selling grease, or if I may modernize the example of the Gemara, if you're a mechanic, so in a chotzeitz, so therefore it doesn't serve as a chatzitza. By Rav asked the following question, dam urevav al bigdamahu. So well, let's say you have blood and grease on your clothing. Now, im tavachu tepuk lemishum revav. Now, if you're a butcher, so the blood doesn't bother you, but the grease does. And if you're a mechanic, so then tepuk lemishum dam. So the grease doesn't bother you, but the blood does. So the Gemara says, well, maybe as a professional, he's a jack of all trades. Now, as a jack of all trades, we know the general rule is that he knows how to do many things, but none of them he can do actually that particularly well. But anyway, but he is a mechanic and he's a butcher. And so the Gemara now wants to know, it's an interesting question. I'm not really sure what's really operating this question, what's pushing this question. So the Gemara says, so he does both. So, David Havaha, achad alo kapit, atarti kapit, odima atarti nam alo kapit. Is there basically a limit in terms of how much bothers him? Meaning, if we say, he's a butcher and he's got blood. So we say, look, that's his job. He's handling blood all the time. Blood on his clothing is not a big deal. And we say the same thing was true regarding a mechanic. Grease is on his clothing all the time. That doesn't bother him. And even if he dabbles in both occupations, The Gemara is basically asking, can we entertain the idea that if he has both grease and blood on his clothing, and even though he's occupied in both, do we say that there still is a limit to how much a person will tolerate on his clothing? Gemara interestingly answers off this question with teku, meaning, I guess we're asking in terms of, generally speaking, what is the threshold of what bothers a person? Gemara doesn't...
It's interesting that the chatzitza is subjective. It's
not Right. Hadron lachtam chatzas, that's the end of the 11th parak, and let's begin now the 12th parak of the Masechta. 12th parak of the Masechta now discusses and describes who is entitled to eat karban. Tvul yom mechusa kippurim ein acholkim bekadashim. Lecho la'erev. You're a tvul yom. That means you're tamei and, right? A simple example, you came into contact with the sheretz, so you're tamei, but the solution, your tahara solution is really simple. You will tov on the mikvah, you will wait till nightfall, and tonight you're going to be tahor. First Mishnah. Mechusar Kippurim. A little bit more complicated, but a Mechusar Kippurim, like a Mitzorah, who goes through a 7-day purification process, and after the conclusion of 7 days, so on the 8th day, he's going to bring Karbanos to the Beis HaMikdash. Only after bringing the Karbanos on the 8th day, and it's not just Mitzorah, there are other examples of this type of Tumah as well. A Zava. But a Yoledes. So a Mitzorah, I'm just using Mitzorah because it's the example that we've gone over time and again. So on day number 8, so before bringing the Karban, he is now categorically called a Mechusar Kippurim, literally lacking in the atonement. And he will not, he or she, will not be able to go into the Beis HaMikdash or eat Karban until they bring their Karbanos on day number 8. Here's what you can't do, says the Mishnah. So you can't now give a distribution of a Karban to somebody who's a Tvul Yom. Now, if you think about it, why not? Meaning, right now they can't eat the Karban, I get it. But tonight, they'll be able to. Mechusar Kippurim, even better. He doesn't even have to wait till tonight. By Mechusar Kippurim, after he brings his Karban, he's allowed to do it. And what we're learning together now in the first Mishnah of the 12th Parak is that you cannot give a distribution of Karban to somebody who currently is unable to eat the Karban, even though we know that tonight they will be able to eat Karban. But that's the point, that's the first point of the Mishnah. Tful yom mechusar kippurim ein acholkim bekadashim lechol la'erev. Onein? Now, when it comes to an onein, aninus in the Torah, as it relates to a Karban, is yom hamisa. On the day of the death of one of one's 7 relatives, mother, father, brother, sister, unmarried sister. Let me do this right. Mother, father, brother, unmarried sister, son, daughter, and spouse. So if one of the 7 relatives were to die on the Yom HaMisa, on the day of death, min HaTorah, the Kohen is an Onein. As an Onein, Kohen, not Kohen Gadol, cannot do the Avoda. Cannot do the Avoda, is also not going to be receiving a distribution as well of Karban. Onein, no Geya, now would be allowed to touch the Karban, meaning an Onein is not Tame. Now, obviously, if the Onein were to make contact with the mace, so obviously the Onein would be Tame. But just by being an Onein in of itself is not Tame, so he can touch the Karban. Eino makriv, but as an onin, you cannot offer a karban. A kohen who is an onin cannot offer a karban. Eino cholek le'echol le'erev, and does not receive a distribution, even though, once again, tonight, he's not going to be an onin min ha-Torah. The aninus period ends by evening. Now, again, I know it's confusing because we are talking about onin, we nowadays talk about onin vis-a-vis burial. And we say that a person's an onin up until the point of burial. After the burial, the person's no longer an onin. That is from our perspective, meaning as non-kohanim, not involved in the Beis HaMikdash. And we're pater min mitzvos until burial, and then after burial, now we're chayav mitzvos. But when we're talking about onin in the context of kohen and avoda, it's only for the Yom HaMisa, the night following min HaTorah, the person's no longer, a kohen's no longer an onin. And even so, even though tonight he is no longer going to be an Onein, the point is going to be the same point. He cannot that day receive a distribution of Karban so that he would be able to eat it that evening. Bali Mumin, Kohanim that have a physical blemish, we will be spending a considerable amount of time in Masechet Becharos going through which Kohanim, what physical blemishes will disqualify a Kohen from doing the Avoda. So Bali Mumin, Bain Bali Mumim Ovrim, Bain Bali Mumim Kvum, and in terms of a physical blemish, it doesn't matter whether this is a temporary condition which will pass, or this is a permanent condition. In any event, Cholkin V'Ochlin. So they can get a distribution of carbon, and they can eat from a carbon. Now, it's interesting because, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow, they can't do the avoda. They're blemished kohanim. They're physically blemished kohanim. They can't do the avoda, and yet they can receive a distribution of carbon. They can eat carbon. Avalom akrivim, but they can't offer. And then the Mishnah says something which is confusing. Kol she'en aray la'avoda, ain't a cholak bebasar. V'chol she'en lo bebasar, ain't lo ba'oros. If you are not fit to do the avoda, you will not be receiving a distribution of meat to eat of any carbon. And if you're not receiving a distribution of meat, you're also not going to be receiving the hide of a carbon ola, meaning for a carbon ola, which is totally burnt on the Mizbeach, but before it's burnt on the Mizbeach, it's flayed. And what happens to the hide of that animal, of the carbon ola? Given to the Kohanim. The Kohanim can make usage of the hide. That hide cannot be enjoyed by somebody who cannot do the avoda, by Kohen who cannot do the avoda. The Mishnah, of course, is a head-scratcher. The Mishnah just taught us that if you're physically blemished, you can receive a distribution. A Baal Mum can receive a chelek of carbon. And then the Mishnah immediately after that says, and oh, by the way, if you can't do the avoda, you're not receiving a distribution. The Mishnah is a head-scratcher. Don't think that this detail goes unnoticed. The Gemara tomorrow is going to discuss that. Tame b'shar zrikas damim, v'tar b'shar hektar chalavim, eino cholek b'basar. Let's say the person is tame for the sprinkling of the blood, but then is tahor, then is tahor at the time of the burning of the fats. Now, the burning of the fats can be done over the course of the night. So Rashi over here simply points out that you can be tame while the blood is sprinkled, meaning during the day. And then, that night, while the fats of the carbon are going to be burnt, so you already experienced Harav Shemesh, which means you're Tahor. But it doesn't matter. Ein ocholik bebasar. You do not receive a distribution because at the time of the Zrika, you were Tamei. Shenem ra'am akrivas adam ashlamim, ve'es chelev mibnei aron, lo tiye shokim in lamana. Meaning you have to be in a position of being not Tamei during the Zrika in order for you to receive a distribution of the carbon,
But you can participate in burning. No? You can participate in
that
burning.
Night?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. Could be. I'm not sure. Okay.
Cannot do the
avodah. Okay, so let's recap. So over the course of this morning, we went over now two rounds of what do we learn out from that last pasuk in Perek Zayin in Vayikra, in Parshat Tzav, where the Torah categorically puts together six different types of karbanos all together in the same pasuk, creating a hekesh. And now what do we learn out from the hekesh? So two times today we went through two brisas, where in brisa number one we went through all six categories, a special halacha learned from all six of the karbanos, extending to all the other karbanos. In brisa number two, we did only five of the six, and even within the five that we did, the second brisa did not agree with the first brisa in terms of all the points that we're learning from one carbon, which extends to all the other carbonos. In finishing up the 11th parak of the Masechta, we went over a couple of odds and ends in terms of whether or not, in order for kibbutz, in order to have a requirement of laundering the blood of a carbon chatas, does it have to actually come into contact with the clothing, or does it have to be absorbed in the clothing? A question the Gemara asked, and the question resolved, it must be an absorption. Chatzitza of blood and grease on your clothing. If your occupation is blood, blood's not a chatzitza. If your occupation is grease, grease is not a chatzitza. What if you're both, and you got both, and you got both on your clothing? Is that going to be considered a chatzitza? Gemara leaves that question unresolved. We started the 12th parak of the Masechta this morning. In the 12th parak, we talked about who is receiving which kohanim are receiving a distribution of carbon, and the basic rule of the Mishnah is that if you can't do the avoda, you're not receiving a distribution. If you can do the avoda, you are going to receive a distribution. And even if you are going to, in the very near future, be able to eat from karban. But if at the time of the Zrikas Adam you are ineligible to do the avoda, you are a tame, you're an onain. So you are not going to be receiving a distribution. Notable exception, of course, is a baal mum. A baal mum can't do the avoda, and yet a baal mum is able to receive a distribution. Later, meaning tomorrow, we are going to discuss why the baal mum is a notable exception.